Welcome to Moray's podcast series, Speaking of Changing Legal, where we discuss the leading trends and innovations, reshaping the way legal work is done. This episode features David Malkinson and Kenzo Tsushima as our hosts for today's topic. They talk about the transformative potential of generative AI in the legal field, emphasizing its rapid adoption, practical applications, privacy and accuracy concerns, and an expected shift towards value-based billing models.
Hey, how are you, David? Good to see you as always.
Very well, very well. Thank you. Thank you, Kenzo. I am in Berlin at a generative AI conference, which is...
Well, perfect timing, right? It's apropos. So you can take what we talk about here and then go to the conference with it, right?
Or vice versa. Exactly. I even use a generative AI tool to, because a lot of the sessions were in German. So I'm using a live, I'm using a live transcription fix so I can actually understand what people are saying, which is
that's the way to do it.
lots of cool tech here that I've not seen before.
Well, we should do one of these right afterwards to talk about what you saw and basically see how they apply the marketing.
I know.
That's great.
Things are moving fast, extremely fast at the moment. And we just had a session where it's quite nice because it's a generative AI conference. It's not actually to do with legal.
Right.
So we're giving our, Mark Schneider was giving our presentation on what we're seeing in generative AI in legal. And there was a load of interest from the audience, loads of questions. And what was really interesting is the level of interest. You know, typically legal have been at the back of the queue, really, in terms of technology. And this is, I think legal generative AI is having a bit of a moment. In a good way.
I think finally, you know what? I've seen no energy like I've seen in the beginning of 2025. And it's one thing to talk about it. It's another thing to actually see people willing to spend dollars behind this and to experiment and to baseline different technologies against others and try use cases. I'm more excited in the last 2 months than I've been in years. I think this is absolutely astounding. But before we get ahead of ourselves, because I feel like we could go on a thread for 5 hours, should we do a couple of intros just so that everyone knows who we are? Because obviously you and I talk to each other quite frequently and kind of, you know, outline at a high level what we're going to be discussing today.
Yeah, you go, Kenzo.
Sure. So my name is Kenzo Tsushima. I'm a managing director in Moray's Mind Factory. It's our solutions engineering unit where we basically optimize legal departments and law firms to transform them into the digital age. It's obviously really focused around generative AI and other legal technologies on how folks can get faster, stronger, better. We consult for a variety of organizations to roadmap exactly the milestones that they should take to implement each of these solutions. And we go in and we deploy them and we administrate them on a regular basis to make sure law firms and corporate legals are saving a ton of money, but they're also really going into the new age in the new century with the best tools on the market.
Tell us about your background, Kenzo.
So I've been with Moray for about 3 years now. Prior to that, I was a consulting partner for over a decade. At a boutique consultancy in Atlanta, Georgia, where I not only focused on process and tech optimization, but I also served as their general counsel. So kind of a dual role, but I think that's where the harmonization of this, you know, legal stuff as well as the technology really, that was the genesis of it.
Great. Well, so I'm David Malkinson, and I have a sort of a fairly long and storied career in legal tech going back to 1999. I'm a technologist at heart, and I've done various different roles within First Phoenix and now Moray. So I look after our DM solutions, and I'm also on the Mind Factory team with you, Kenzo. So we are, you know, we made a decision as a company that we need to lean into the whole AI space and the technology space. So we put together a crack squad of about five of us called the Mind Factory team to really go to market. And really lean into this AI space, and so far 6 weeks in, it's been eye opening. You know, it's been incredible what we've heard from the market and how
absolutely. And I think part of the reason and the reason for the formation of the team is because a lot of people have interest, like you mentioned. A lot of people have energy. What people don't necessarily have is the know-how, so they need trusted advisors to come in and hold their hand through the process because it's scary. You hear at these conferences a lot of questions about losing my job or, you know, change management. And I think having folks that they can call on a whim and be like, I'm really struggling with my AI adoption. And, you know, funnily enough, the topic of this webinar is Adopting AI in Legal Tech, Why Hesitate? So we're going to kind of talk about all of the reasons why not to hesitate. But it's exactly that. Folks have a lot of energy, but not necessarily a lot of planning on how to implement these optimally.
Yeah, and what I see is that there's such a big range of where firms are at currently, both corporate. Some are just starting out, some are fast followers, and some are further ahead. And what we try and do is sort of place ourselves. So if you're further ahead, we've got our real AI engineers we can use. If you want to just buy a tool quickly and get going with that, we can help you. Or if it's just the
Just the
educational piece at the start, we can help that too. So it's been really interesting seeing where people are on in the journey. I was having a chat with somebody from Microsoft the other day. I was at a conference, and it was the person in charge of Copilot, and they said that they noticed that legal were very slow to adopt cloud technologies. Mm-hmm. To get to about, we're at about 40%, 45% adoption within legal of generative AI. I think if you were to include the private use of ChatGPT, which shall not be talked about, or Gemini, or the side tool, my bet is way, way higher than 40%. But let's go with 40%.
The official number that they're allowed to quantify without getting into trouble.
Exactly. So the let's say it's 40%. That took 2 years to get there. Mm-hmm. It took 11 years to get to 40% cloud adoption within legal. That same thing. So and actually, of all the professional services disciplines, legal is the furthest ahead, which is totally different. Normally, they're very, very conservative in terms of adoption and usage. So. That's been really interesting to see.
It's interesting because you and I have both been in both legal and technology forever, or essentially our entire careers, and we've seen the slowness of adoption, you know, kind of industry-wide. It's been, I think, a source of frustration for us both. And now it's a really good point how you saw a really slow ramp historically, and now you're seeing a much quicker ramp. And my theory on that is essentially, it's so easy to onboard and train yourself to use these tools. So you talk about a CLM implementation back in the day, or you talk about a document management implementation. These are 6 to 8 month exercises. They require, you know, a lot of stakeholder buy-in, a lot of change management. You almost have to prove the ROI after the fact. Now you have tools you can basically learn how to use in 20 minutes. You can stand up the instance as long as it takes you to get a login. You can start playing with this immediately. Oh, and by the way, you can get really creative with your prompt engineering. So I think the fact that legal professionals can just dive into it without having to build all of this ancillary architecture around the solution makes it more compelling to actually experiment, you know?
Totally. And like the traditional way, I speak to some IT directors who are struggling to get their head around what that means. The traditional way of find a business case, deliver your use cases, do a beauty parade of products, then train, then adopt. All of that has just been turned completely on its head. And I think, although it's a bit uncomfortable for some, it's the right way of doing it because there are so many use cases. It's so easy to use. It's so, you can get so much value from it from just diving straight in so quickly that it's paid off. And those firms who dived in very early, you know, sort of early to mid 2023, are reaping the dividends. They're the ones we see that are furthest ahead now, and they're starting to sort of properly automate things.
And it's interesting because I think, you know, in comparison to the legal industry, software product management has been ahead of the game a little bit, where they moved from the waterfall model to the agile model. And a lot of CLM implementation didn't necessarily allow for that, or a lot of document management implementation didn't necessarily allow for it. You have to make a commitment, you have to get people on board, and then essentially you have to have a command and control structure where you force adoption, right? Or you mandate adoption. Here, it can be a much more agile approach. Have one person in your legal ops department try a new tool, get an ROI behind it, quantify how much time that single person is saving on certain discrete tasks, test this out in one geo or one business unit with a couple folks, and then it grows from there. Seeing the organic growth of usage, adoption of, you know, even a license count, right? So we're not in situations anymore where folks pay for 1,000 seats and you have 12 active users at the end of the year. You have, you know, a one-to-one correlation of active users because you're only onboarding users as they're adopting the tool.
That's right. Yeah. And it's very, very different. I mean, I've spent my whole life doing DM projects, which are notoriously difficult. They're a heavy lift, and if you get any less than 100% adoption, it's deemed to be a failure. You've got to do these great big data migrations, and you know, we're the best at it, but it's not a project that you go into lightly. It's a 10-year commitment to a platform like that, because it's you know, you've got to really to justify the sort of the heavy lift. Not so with AI tools, right?
Right. So let's talk about something interesting, because both of us saw it last year where essentially we saw a lot of market hesitation last year. And obviously, you know, we all started finding out about LLMs and generative AI models probably at the end of 2022. 2023, there was a lot of hype. 2024, I thought at the end of 2023 was going to be the explosion, and it looks like it's going to be 2025 instead. So in terms of folks overcoming their fear and really jumping in headfirst and us being the facilitators and the encouragers to do that, what do you think maybe caused a little bit of that trepidation back in 2024? And what do you think has alleviated that in 2025?
There are, I think, the two big things for lawyers who rely on complete accuracy, precision, mm-hmm. you know, a machine that makes things up mm-hmm. and isn't necessarily the best privacy advocate is extremely problematic. All these scare stories across the internet. Where firms are at now, you know, there are you can stand up things inside your own Azure environment a lot easier, which takes care of a lot of the privacy issues. No legal AI vendor would get anywhere unless they can guarantee that the data isn't being used for training, or at least sign up to those terms. So I think the market has got over the privacy issue. And clients have as well. You know, clients generally expect their law firms to be using these tools. We'll get to that in a minute. And with the hallucinations things as well, sort of there's been a general acceptance that it might make things up, that you can't just blindly copy and paste the output in there. But also the tooling as well is doing a lot better on the explainability of it. So they're citing references. They are making sure that you can just go and cross-check within the UI. And that's made a huge difference to give people that comfort to use the tooling. So
it's one of my favorite features actually about our More AI Legal Companion tool, that essentially, so it gives you the answer, it gives you the reasoning behind the answer when you're interrogating your contract portfolio, but then it's actually citing where it got it from, right? So it's not, hey, I have to take the AI, you know, the AI's word for what it is. I can now actually go QC this and make sure that it's pulling from the correct section references, it's making the correct inferences. And essentially, because we're, to your point about kind of the ethics behind this and its usage and its governance, we can never just pass on the output from a generative AI tool as final work product, right? But we're cutting off 3-4 hours from that process. So we're cutting down a multi-hour exercise that's going to take half your day down to 20 minutes, 15 minutes, sometimes even less. And I think that's the real value. I also think the privacy, the issue is a really good point. Last year, it was maybe the top question I got asked, you know, when everyone was kind of asking questions about generative AI and its applications to legal technology. Now it's almost like a side question, right? They know it's going to be addressed. They want to see the tech architecture behind it. They want to see the private Azure instance, but it's not stop the conversation. I'm not speaking to you for another minute until you address my privacy. It's like, oh, by the way, let's talk about privacy just to make sure I cross my T's and dot my I's. It's definitely a secondary concern now.
It is. Yeah. And you're quite right. It was the number one question that we got asked last year. Number one. And it's still a concern. Don't get me wrong, but as I say, no legal AI vendor would get out the gate if they hadn't solved it. So all the vendors are thinking that as a first principle. So they come to the party. Usually they'll send actually a PDF beforehand to say, by the way, we've got the security sorted now. Let's actually concentrate on the tech itself. It's been a big difference.
One of the other objections I saw last year quite frequently was, oh God, I can't learn to use yet another tool. I have so much work. I can't possibly onboard myself, right? So one of my favorite things to do in some of these calls is basically start with a blank instance of Legal Companion, which is one of many generative AI tools in the market, and show basically, okay, so I'm starting from scratch. How long would it take me to just start using it from this being completely empty to I actually want an output. And the answer is typically under 5 minutes. And I think when you get in touch with legal operations folks or even GCs, and they're like, oh God, I can't learn another system. Don't you dare put another system. And it's not a system. It's a platform to make your life easier. It's an assistant. It's a companion, right? So you get on there, you put it by, and then people are like, oh, you see almost the emotional stages go through their face. They're like, one, I don't believe this. Show me more. Secondly is, no, I still don't believe it. Third is, oh my God, how did I live without this for so many years? Fourth is, get it in my hands immediately. I need to try it, right? So seeing all of that wash over the face in a span of 10 minutes has been kind of a fascinating journey, you know?
And you see that in the POCs that we've been running as well.
Right.
I mean, traditionally, software vendors are completely allergic to doing POCs.
Right.
Because, you know, with the old sort of, with sort of traditional SaaS technology, you've got to set up an instance, you've got to do a bit of migration, you've got to show it on their tech, they've got to learn to use it, so you've got to do a sort of mini adoption program, and you've got to do quite a lot of hand-holding with no guarantee of an outcome. Actually, these days, when you run a POC, we know it's a lot lighter weight touch on a support level, because they are a lot easier to use, and you'll see use cases just organically come out. The use case I hadn't thought of, they're just using the tool, and they said, oh, I want to do it to do this task which I've been doing manually for years. Can you help me out? And they just sort of organically breed, which points to the fact that the old requirements, use case, business case buy paradigm doesn't necessarily work in this. It may do once you get established with it and you start to establish your use cases and you're ready for the next level, the whole build or buy thing. But but just to get going, there's a strong argument for just standing something up and going, even if it's imperfect.
I think what you kind of teed up the conversation of essentially for those folks who are still in the contemplation phase, how to really overcome that hesitation, right? And to the point about a much lighter lift, I think there has been a historical fear because most people are familiar with the classic SaaS model that, oh, okay, I need to do all of the due diligence in the world before I spend millions of dollars and sign a 3-year enterprise deal. And now I'm stuck with this. And by the way, it's not just 3 years, because I'm so immersed in this technology at this point, that would be so arduous to go and, change the technology down the line, right? So what you're talking about is essentially, I think you mentioned earlier, decade commitment, right? So I think now there's no long-term 3-year commitments. It's, hey, try this for 3 months, see if you like it. If you like it, then you can kind of expand the offering and the solution and get it into other folks' hands. But it's so small in terms of these POCs and kind of deploying it on a micro level. And once you have advocates and champions within the organization, it winds up catching on like wildfire, because the one person who couldn't live with it is evangelizing the fact that they couldn't. And now you have 3 people, you have 5 people, you have 7 people realizing, how did I ever live without Copilot? How did I ever live without Legal Companion? I couldn't do my daily work with this. And by the way, no one is letting me use the standard version of ChatGPT because there's a lot of privacy issues with it. So I need something legally specific. And now I'm getting that legally specific environment and I'm able to do all of my work so much faster and more efficiently.
Yeah, absolutely. And can you imagine the sort of the pressure which is mounting considerably now, not only from clients who are just their tolerance for large billable hour rates for work that can be automated is declining quite significantly.
It is.
But it's also from, can you imagine if you're a junior lawyer in a law firm who's actually been used to using ChatGPT at home or knows that it is totally possible to use it to automate the tasks that they're doing, be it summarization or doc review, or and they're not allowed to use it. How frustrating that would be. There was a recent survey I saw where it's just people saying, we have to use these tools because they're worried about being left behind in terms of skills for using these tools, and they're frustrated that they're taking additional hours to do a task that they know can be automated. So.
Right. I mean, I'll give a couple of real world examples here on how transformative this is. So I was using ChatGPT the other day because I have a plumbing issue. I have really low water pressure right now. So I typed in, I'm like, hey, my PSI is this. Why is my water pressure so low? And it gave me basically a detailed analysis on why my water pressure could be low. I gave it some inputs, blah, 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 right? I did something very similar with an NDA that we just got in for a financial services institution. I basically needed a 3-second answer. And again, I've been an attorney my entire life. Needed a 3-second answer. Is this a normal mutual NDA? So I typed in, hey, is this a standard? I threw it in our little companion tool. Is this a standard mutual NDA? And it was like, pretty much, yeah, it's standard. It has a couple banking specific terms. Look in this section. But other than that, there's no deviation from a quote unquote normal NDA. Now, I was able to get that insight basically in 3 seconds. I remember when I was a GC back in the day, we got a very complex DPA to review that required outside counsel to get in. So instead of getting quick synthesis and insights and being able to throw it and basically putting my time behind it because I was able to do that as part of that role, essentially outside counsel had to review it. They had to do their manual, you know, really going through this tens or 100 page DPA. Mm-hmm. And we wound up getting a bill for over $10,000 to look at a single DPA. And by the way, that wasn't even a commercial DPA. It was just some kind of a CYA exercise for the rest of the engagement. So we're talking before even making revenue off a potential engagement, having to pay $10,000 just to enter the field, right? And that's the kind of thing where this kind of technology has completely cut that barrier to entry down.
Yeah, and from a law firm in defense of them, they have to give you the right answer.
100%, right.
So they have to read the document from top to bottom, right? A quick answer is just not going to cut it. They need to give you the right answer, and therefore they need to spend that amount of billable time to give you the answer in fairness to them. But actually what you want as a customer is a quick answer to something.
Yep.
Now this may well, once it becomes a real engagement, you need to put outside counsel. I use it all the time for quick answers to things.
Right.
You know, we're seeing similar things with like early case assessments in litigation. You know, you just want to get a quick answer on a chronology just to figure out where you're at. So getting quick answers to things is important. And not only is getting, when you're shutting the time down, you just want to think about the total amount of time. So from a law firm side, you know, getting these task automations in, let's say it comes into a partner, senior associate, that task then needs to go down to a junior lawyer to do the doc review or whatever sort of more labor intensive task that it is. That then goes on that other person's to-do list. That's a day gone. Then they're going to wait for their to-do list to get to the point.
Yep.
It's another day. That's 48 hours. Then the task gets done, which may take 2 hours, comes back and off it goes to the client. So what, even if there's no time saving in the task and that you can press a button and do that automatically, the fact that you're not having to pass it to other people's inboxes reduces time massively and makes your value to the client way, way higher. So,
and you're more empowered, right? Sometimes, you know, there's obviously, we all have a finite amount of time in the day, but sometimes you want to be able to do things yourself and you never had 2 hours to dig into it before. So you had to send that email to the junior associate. You had to send that email to the paralegal and they had to read it and respond. And to your point, it's cutting down all of those ancillary communications, but it also is empowering to a certain degree because I want to be able to just do that answer autonomously. I want to be able to just dive into it for 5 minutes, get something. And that's where, you know, those section references come in. It's like, okay, I need a quick answer, but I need you to tell me where to focus my attention. So instead of having to look through a 36-page doc, I have to look through one paragraph, and that's much easier for me to do. I know exactly where to look at because that's the whole point of isolating the actual important material, right? And we talk about kind of contracts all the time. We talk about how this kind of speed up negotiation. We talk about contract interrogation and summarization. I think these are all amazing use cases. One of the things I've personally bumped into, and I'd love your thought on this from both the law firm and corporate side, is M&A. So M&A, to your point about having to, it was necessary for law firms to go in and make sure that due diligence is perfect, that you're going through top to bottom, making sure that you're reporting on anything that could affect M&A, you know, to the umpteenth degree, so that the folks who are spending, you know, $1 billion on acquisitions are making sure that they're putting their money in the right place and they're protected from risk. Now, you can power through and extract that data so quickly. So you still need to, you know, report and give strategic insights, but you're transitioning all of that manual review and allowing your M&A team to actually focus on the strategy and the reporting and the business case rather than, okay, I spent 8 hours summarizing this and 1 hour strategizing what it means and synthesizing, essentially. It's shifting the distribution of work to the more valuable part.
Absolutely. And you'll... And it doesn't take away the strategic work. It probably means that younger lawyers will be able to take on that strategic work earlier on in their career, which is good. And you'll see billable hours go up. It can't not, can it? over time, the billable rate is going to go up for that high-level value strategic work, because that's where all the value is. So there's so many startups in that M&A space that I see coming up. I was speaking to somebody the other day who's not only just doing the extract, but actually automating the whole document generation.
Right.
And then putting it on a, because particularly when you're a founder selling a company, you just have to produce the same documents again and again and again.
Right.
And it's only the founders that can do it. So they just spend forever trying to pull all this data together on top of trying to run the business at the same time. And automating all of that will just make a huge difference. So it's not just a basic extraction or summarization. It's actually chaining these use cases together in really, really new and interesting ways to save the pain of otherwise extremely busy people, you know.
So let me get your take on something, because we started the conversation by essentially talking about the renewed energy, focus, and increased adoption for generative AI in legal technology. However, one of the things that I think we both have opinions on, but you're so plugged into the law firm market, is the transition and the eventual transition, the current transition from billable hours to value-based billing, because obviously we're talking about efficiency, we're talking about speed of tasks, we're talking about speed of review. All of this necessarily decreases the amount of hours spent on the more manual tasks, hours that have historically been billed in 6-minute increments at very high rates. So what have you seen in terms of the market and the appetite to get a little bit more creative with value-based billing models on the law firm side?
You hear anecdotally, it's not changed anywhere near as much as you would think, right? They're still mostly on the billable hours. I think if most law firms are being honest, they haven't quite figured that out en masse yet. There are certain examples you'll see of some interesting billing techniques that you see out in the field to encourage the use of the tools themselves, to incentivize people via billing credits or whatever to use those tools and to show those savings to the client, which has been really, really interesting. It's just, you can't see that when time is being saved on billing, how that isn't going to change the fee model. I'm really looking forward to any law firm or survey that would actually show the use of the generative AI and the use cases per department, and then track that, see how proportional that is to alternative fee arrangements in those departments. It can't not change things.
It's interesting because on the US side, what I haven't seen proactive creativity, but with most industries, I've seen reactive, to clients, right? Clients have asked their law firms when they're doing panel reviews or even when they're just evaluating who's going to do an enterprise level project, they're saying, hey, what generative AI technology are you using or what legal technology are you using to make your reviews faster and how are you going to integrate into this engagement? And if the answer is none, this is all manual, guess what? They're looking elsewhere, right? So it's not even I want to be at the forefront of the legal technology industry because I'm the preeminent law firm in the United States. It's, oh, wow, I have FOMO and I'm going to start losing clients if I don't get a little bit more creative with the way our folks are using generative AI technology. And you mentioned something, it's very funny, but it's also very relevant, which is if you want to attract new talent as kind of one of those AmLaw 50s, you need to make sure that you're giving the younger attorneys the tools that they're used to using, right? So if you're using ChatGPT or Gemini or Anthropic on a daily basis, and you go to work every day, and for those 10 hours, you're not allowed to use these tools and you have to power everything through everything manually, you're going to be kind of dissatisfied with your job and you're going to look for other places where you can really shine as a young professional and impart your creativity. So I think there's a side effect that not only are clients demanding it, but the folks who are entering the workforce in this field are demanding it as well. So it's coming from both sides.
Yeah. Can you imagine if they took the tools away from us at Murray? What that would be like? No.
We would revolt. We'd have a revolution on our hands.
Which is kind of scary because you're thinking, are these tools just making us stupid? I often think about this. I use it all the time for so many different use cases, so many junctures during the day, for proofreading things, mostly because I'm awful at proofreading. I can never check my own work. You know, I just, the amount of times I've done not instead of now, you know, back in my old days when I'd do, the system is not available. What I meant to say is I've just finished all of the work. The system is now available. That's a typo that Spelltech doesn't pick up, but it's just one letter makes a huge, huge difference. So, take those tools away from me and I would be a very unhappy
company. And I think it's just about the scale of tools at this point and how helpful they are. I mean, you know, compare features in Words, or there have been legal technology compare features forever, right? And you compare one doc to another and you kind of isolate what those differences are. But now the fact that you can throw in 5, 10 things and say, hey, in 3 seconds, give me a table showing the comparison, the differences between these things, and do it by subject areas. And you have a report on that in, again, 10 seconds. So to not just do a direct one-to-one compare and have to open up multiple docs or run it through a rudimentary machine learning tool, but having a generative AI tool that aggregates this data and gives it back to you in exactly the format you're looking for is just, it changes my life on a daily basis. And it's not even hyperbole. It's amazing stuff, you know?
Yeah, and the thing that's changed my life recently, deep research. I've used Perplexity deep research. I've used Google Gemini deep research. I can't quite stump up the $200 for the OpenAI one, even though I'm really tempted.
When they drop the price to $30, you're going to get on board.
I'm in straight away. Okay. I'm on the $20 plan at the moment. I now have three plans because I'm slightly obsessed across all three of them. But wow, that deep research has made a big difference. You know, I'm hosting a panel tomorrow with some real experts, 4 doctors, on AI regulations, EU AI regulations, and how that sort of interplays with innovation. I'm pretty sure I felt a lot more comfortable after using those deep research, giving it an unbelievably good report to get me up and running very, very quickly. So it's just part of daily life now.
You know. It's a really good point, because one of the use cases that we haven't talked about yet is essentially, let's say you have you're a corporate, you have your golden standard template, and you've been using it for years, but there's new legislation, there's a new GDPR thing, there's new case law. How nice would it be to throw in your template or existing contract, to throw in the new legislation and say, give me an analysis on how this legislation or case law affects my template or my existing contract, what's my risk profile? Boom, you have that in. Now, in the past, you would have had to read the legislation, understand the legislation, and then go into your contract and see, okay, I have to apply it here, I have to apply it in this section. And it would require not only so much time, but manual reasoning and really, really heavy brain power. And I still think you need that heavy brain power on the tail end of it when you're coming up with a strategic plan on how to address your risk profile. But prior to that, you're not having to do any of that heavy lift, right? And I think for me personally, that's been a huge value add.
And that's the sort of the horizon scanning regulatory use case, which I think is really cool, particularly when you then chain that with, I think one of the big things that the DM vendors have done, I know iManager have got this functionality, is automatically tagging documents and tagging them as the type of documents they are based on AI. Yep. Actually, it doesn't look that impressive when you do it. It's not like it's producing a great big report, but wow, how useful that is. That AI enrichment that they call it is just makes a tremendous difference. So in that horizon scanning use case, you can find the regulations and then you can go into your DM and very, very quickly pull up all of those contracts of advice that you've given related to that regulation, filtered down by practice area, by client, and then you know exactly what advice has gone out, which now needs updating, and what a value add to a client that could potentially be, you know.
No, because I want to make sure people know at the end of this, essentially, given all of the developments in the market, what to do, right? I mean, we've talked about the fact that this is kind of a go-to assistant and a huge value add. This saves time. This saves money. This makes your job easier and more fun. This mitigates your risk profile when it comes to new legislation and its application to your current contract portfolio. You can interrogate your full contract repository in a moment's notice. You can do enhanced due diligence for any sort of M&A activities you're involved in. There's so many use cases, but instead of bombarding the market with use cases, although that's fun too, what do you think are a few calls to action that folks can take away from this, where they're like, okay, I heard what these guys said, they're passionate about it, they know exactly what optimal looks like for a legal department and a law firm, what should I go do as a next step?
Well, speak to us is the first thing to do, obviously.
Of course.
So speak to us. And the types of things we would say is we would give you an overview of where generative AI is today. If you're starting from nothing, which most people aren't these days, we'll give you an overview. And there are a few choices. There is, depending on your view on the use of third-party models, most people are pretty cool with using the OpenAI endpoints. Obviously, the zero-day endpoints of OpenAI, of Gemini, pick your model, and then there's a platform to go with that. We've got our legal companion. There's also the AI tools within iManage that we can use. But you may want to build your own tool within Azure OpenAI. There's certainly quite a groundswell, actually, of firms that just want everything to stay within their own Azure tenant. So certainly with some CEOs who want everything to be within the Microsoft world, they want to try and keep everything as contained as possible. And there's no right or wrong to that. But there are tools that you can buy which you can guarantee the security when it will use multiple models, or you can stand up something inside your own environment. We've got our own generative AI secure playground. You may choose to have the AI within your DM vendor. We know the iManage one very, very well. Or there may be, that's a good place to get started. So you can start prompting, you can start using these tools and getting outputs and delivering these use cases. That's where I would definitely start.
What I would suggest for attorneys who are not super familiar with legal technology in general is, because I think a lot of the discussion has focused around translating what you're using in your personal life to what you're using in your work life, right? To make sure those align. I think, unfortunately, there's a lot of folks, especially attorneys, who this applies to the medical field as well, but who are not necessarily using Claude or ChatGPT or Gemini in their personal lives, right? But it's, for me at least, it's almost replaced a search engine to a certain degree, because it's going beyond just showing you the results, it's showing you insights, right? And I think once you get used to it, once you spend a week or two, asking questions and kind of getting very targeted answers rather than having to parse through all of these yourselves, you kind of become a believer in what it's able to do, right? So I would say, play with this in your personal life, try to become familiar with the process, and then you will immediately be able to translate that into the potential use cases at your job. In which case, as we've talked about, experimenting with this in terms of the legal technology used to take 6 to 8 months, now it takes 20 minutes. So it's such an easy transition. Get on board, love it, and then bring it into your work life, essentially.
There is a moment that you need to, there is a little hurdle, isn't there, when you first start using it, where you just get so annoyed with it. Stop making things up. Just like, I know that isn't right. But you actually learn almost how it thinks the more you use it.
And you learn how
to prompt it. You know when to shout at it in capital letters, and it's just suddenly,
exclamation point.
You know how to tell OpenAI particularly to stop being such a sycophant, which I find really annoying. So I've had to tell it, you tend to the customer, and then actually once you start to sort of understand how it thinks, your output increases massively, and then your productivity sort of increases exponentially once you've got over that initial hump. It makes a huge, huge difference. And then you're ready to bring it to work with the tools that you've got.
And it's a really good point about kind of, understanding how it thinks and how it outputs information, because there's certain things, activities at law firms and legal departments that need to be in very specific formats, right? They need to be in tables, or they need to be basically three paragraphs with two sentences each. So if you say, hey, you type something in, it gives you an 18 paragraph answer. You type something in, it gives you a one word answer, right? That's not necessarily what you want. But if you follow up your initial prompt with, okay, now give me the answer, in three paragraphs with two sentences, it's going to give you exactly that. So you can put any format you want in terms of aligning it to whatever your corporate legal structure or law department, law firm regulations are, or standard formatting, and then boom, you're done. So I think the fact that you can create whatever is already necessitated from a process standpoint and iterate upon that is extremely valuable.
It is. It is. Yeah. So I think our advice is get going.
Get going. Yeah. Get going. It's too much fun to wait, basically. That's what I'll end with.
Exactly. Those magic moments where you discover something really cool and you manage to do everything within one prompt and hit one button and you've just saved yourself half a day's work. It may take you half a day or more to actually get to the point of saving you half a day, but that's when you start to see that sort of compound interest, as it were, in sort of in terms of productivity. So,
well, David, as always, it was an absolute pleasure to talk to you today. I'm sure we'll be talking later this week. But for those of you who have listened to this and enjoyed the conversation, again, you can tell that David and I absolutely love this, live it and breathe it. So have a conversation with us. Come talk to us. I think we can show you a world of possibilities in terms of how heavy or light you want your initial deployments to be.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Kenzo. It's been great.
All right.
Until the next time. Cheers.